This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Fiona, Danae, and we've got Bree back off the interchange bench.
Excellent.
Today. She's been over in the US, parting with some good friends and hitting the US Open. If you listen to the sports show, you would have heard all about that. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. We've had a big week, haven't we, ladies? The All-Star Women's Game was on Saturday night, and what a night it was. Something that I think I'll always remember. And we're going to be talking about that together, all the highlights of that. And it was a bye week, so we've got plenty of time to talk about the women's game, which is awesome.
That's fantastic. Fee, you know how our footy theme says Melbourne's talking football? Well, I think the whole nation was talking about women playing football on the weekend.
Yeah, that's right.
Bloody fantastic.
They were certainly watching it, the whole nation, weren't they?
A million people, apparently, at altogether on an average. And Danae and I caught up earlier today with brunette Lekic.
Lenkic.
We did try to get her name right, and then I practiced it before. But she was absolutely lovely. She's the author of Play On, The Hidden History of Women's Australian Rules Football. The three of us were at the book launch last night. Been on lots of CTF excursions. So we're going to be playing part of that interview, but you can catch the next part of that interview on the podcast, the extended mix of the interview. And we'll also preview, of course, the finals games that are coming up this week.
We've got a Thursday final tomorrow. Yeah. It kicks off tomorrow.
I know my partner's away this week and I get to watch Thursday night football at home.
Oh my goodness, how does it feel for you?
I know.
That's good.
So the women's game.
Well, All-Star, where do we start?
The All-Star Women's Game at Witten Oval, Saturday night. We were down there. There was four of the Chicks Talking Footy girls down there. Moddy and Beck came down. Danae and myself were there amongst almost 6,500 people. So yeah. What an electric night that was.
It was, and it was at Witten Oval, and I think capacity at Witten Oval is about 9,000, so it was perfectly full because it wasn't too full. There were queues to get things like beers and donuts and stuff, but not too long a queue, and everyone could move around, feel comfortable, chat with people, and watch the most fantastic game from the Western Bulldogs and the Melbourne Demons.
Yep.
Their all-star game was all class. It was brilliant.
Did you get a chance to watch it? I know you were flying back.
I did. I landed that day, but I did tune in, and the standard was amazing of the game. And Witten Oval under lights looked terrific on the TV.
Well, actually, we were sitting on one of the grandstands, and from there you could literally see the cityscape on the other side of the oval. It's actually quite a lovely oval to be at and watch a game of footy.
And their first game under lights at Witten Oval. Mm. So how auspicious is that?
Yeah.
I went for a walk in the third quarter to watch the game from a different angle, and gee, it was a bit cold on the Doug Hawkins wing because there was no protection. But again, there were just people having a good time watching the game. It was such a good vibe.
Yep, we bumped into our friends from the Outer Sanctum and hung out with them for the evening.
Few hip and shoulders and a lot of chin wagging.
Yes,
with
that's
the Outer
right.
Sanctum crew.
Well, I think a lot of us were just on a high, and bumped into Rebecca Madden. Had a chat with her. Had a photo taken. She's lovely. She actually heard the Chicks Talking Footy team on the Pride broadcast. She said she didn't listen to the whole 4 hours, but she did hear it. So,
and we all stood to applaud Susan Alberti when she came to take her seat before the game. That was a lovely moment. It was a good night.
Yeah, just a feel-good night. But what are some of the stats, Bree? We broke a few records.
Oh, we did. Twitter. Let's just talk about social media went into meltdown. Peaked seventh in the world.
We say that.
We say that, AFL women's game.
The hashtag AFL women's game.
Yeah.
I actually tweeted Steve Price. He's the
I saw that.
Old fuddy-duddy from that goes on the project sometime. And but the week the women's league came out, he was on national TV saying, "Who's going to watch a women's game?" And I tweeted him and said, "At Steve Price, when you said that no one would watch a women's game, you were wrong because there was 6,500 people there." And that's before I even knew that the rankings on TV. So
exactly.
And it went viral. I had about 30 retweets.
Oh, viral.
Viral. 30 retweets. And look, it was good to be able to rub it in, really, to the doubters.
Clearly, there were a lot of people tweeting AFL women's game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Clearly. And a lot of people watching. The audience peaked at 1.05 million viewers, which is was the highest ranking game this year.
The highest Saturday night.
Saturday night game.
Amazing. And the best part about that, Hawk
Tiger.
And Tiger, the best part about that was that people switched on and stayed on. So it wasn't just a quick sticky look. It was a sticky look.
Yeah, I feel like I didn't get to watch the game properly because I was so busy.
Well, I watched the game, and can I just say the skill level was amazing, and I was really impressed. Well, you know, obviously Moana Hope starred with 6 goals, but Katie Brennan, every time she touched the ball, it was silk. Like, she seemed like a Pendlebury type that had time and space every time she got the ball and used it really, really well. Brianna Davey. Mm-hmm. And Randall, in the back line for the Dogs, repelled a lot of demon attacks. Like, they were superb under pressure. So they were the three that stood out for me for the Doggies.
Fantastic. Yep. Did you notice that there were only 16 aside on the field? Could you tell?
No, not the number, but I did notice the space.
Yeah.
So it looked to me like it was more open and more free-flowing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were very few congested segments.
Yeah, we just had a message come in, actually, from Betty, who was there with us on the night. Betty is a massive Bulldogs fan and the photographer here at Joy. She said, "Sensational game, AFL women's game. Great to meet the players on the field after the game. Hashtag be more Bulldog, Betty."
I don't think you could any more Bulldog.
No, Betty was fully in her get-up on Saturday night. And such a lovely person to hang out with. So thank you, Betty, for all your hard work.
So there were 16 aside. I couldn't tell except that I knew. So I'd already seen it was an open game.
They didn't play any wings. So they were the two spots that were missing. There were no wings.
Well, someone else said they saw the gaps in the forward line. So maybe, who knows? Who knows? But it was a smaller ball. So it's now officially a size 4. And it used to be a 4.5, but it's the same weight as regular football.
Why does they do that?
Because female hands are smaller than male hands, and they actually measured them.
And they did 15-minute quarters, capped it at 15?
I think so.
Yeah.
I was just so busy
eating hot dogs and running around.
You were
with our
eating
friends.
The hot dogs.
I ate 2 hot dogs because they were just like the hot dogs I used to have at Princess Park when I was a kid.
Yeah, right.
You've got to try the Central Park hot dogs.
Ah. Yes,
they're great.
Oh, okay.
Okay then. Okay. I'm just going to name drop my hot dog.
Yeah.
And I'm a vegetarian, we change the subject?
Okay.
Yeah, right. We've had another message from someone that you might know from the Chicks Talking Footy team. Still getting mileage out of your Steve Price tweet, Fee. Saturday night was just amazing. So excited to have been there. A great inspiration for girls who want to play and even girls who just want to watch and feel part of it. I'm limbering up for my return off the interchange bench for the GF Grand Final show. Go Crows. That was from Beck.
Well, we'll talk about who might be in that GF, i.e. who might survive this week, the first week of the AFL finals, but not until later in the show because we've got a lot of women's football to talk about before then.
And we'd rather talk about that.
Should we talk about their pay?
Lack thereof. It has been...
Welcome back to Australia, Tiger. It feels like you're just catching up.
I couldn't have landed at the right time. Like, couldn't have timed my landing perfectly.
You've missed... We pack a lot into each week and...
Yeah.
You've certainly missed her.
So tell us your thoughts on the pay issue for the National Women's League starting in February next year.
Well, I mean, the marquee players will get paid $25,000. If you're a priority pick, you'll get paid 10, and then if you're just a regular player, you'll get paid 5,000.
Mm.
So I think the AFL has said that this is proportionate to a startup league.
Startup league?
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Okay.
And
yeah. In 1897.
Yeah. Right. And that they'll adjust it, like, you know, as it progresses. So
my thing though is that the, you know, we've started new teams, the Giants, Gold Coast, mm-hmm. and the players are getting paid more than the other players in the league to try and get the team boosted. And, I mean, even Saturday night proved that it's going to get ratings, it's going to earn the AFL money. And I think if they're not putting that pay up reasonably quickly, there'll be some angry people.
And don't they have to take out their own private health?
Yeah.
I mean, I find that absurd.
Well, especially when you're doing a job that puts your body on the line. I think it's reasonable to
along
request.
With your other job that you already have.
Yeah.
If you do an ACL, there's your $5,000 gone.
Yeah. There'll be a couple of issues. How many sponsors sign on to the National Women's League, and the broadcasting issues that are going to take some time to resolve about how they get to broadcast it, what rights do they have? It'll be very interesting. The AFL will be under pressure, I think, from the broader community and fantastic people on the advisory group for the National Women's League. And I think that some good decisions will be made. I hope they are made sooner rather than later.
Well, Susan Alberti, our friend, our new friend, is is on the Players Association board. So she's...
What isn't she on?
I know.
Seriously.
Put her fingers in a lot of pies.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to be back in a moment. Danae and I caught up with Brunette Lenkic earlier today, the author of Play On.
I'm Alyssa Hickey from the Melbourne Demons, and you're listening to Chicks Talking Footy on Joy 94.9.
Oh, Mel Hickey, she was playing on Saturday night at the All Stars Women's AFL game, and we had a chat to her at the Pride broadcast earlier this year. She was such a lovely person, we're very proud of her becoming a marquee player. But last night, ladies, we were at the book launch of Play On, the hidden history of Australian women's Australian rules football. I actually caught up with a friend from lunch today, and she goes, "Oh, that'll be a short book." And I said, "No." Well, that's the assumption, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, for me personally, in my head, I sort of dated women's football back to about 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And to read this book and really learn about the history, it really goes back more, you know, about 100 years, what they can trace anyway. And it's fascinating where the games come from and where some of the women that have pioneered to get women's football to where it is today. And I think a lot of women were quite emotional on Saturday night because to see it where it is, is such a fabulous thing. So, it was a great night last night, wasn't it?
It was.
Danae and I caught up with the author, Brunette Lenkic, today. It was also co-authored by Rob Hess, but we had a great chat to her. I'll play that for you now.
Last weekend saw the Western Bulldogs Melbourne Women's AFL All-Stars match draw a massive national TV audience of more than 1 million people. The game, which was fantastic, was played at Witten Oval in front of a crowd of more than 6,000 people. And if you think that is the biggest crowd to ever watch women play Australian rules football, you haven't yet read Play On, The Hidden History of Women's Australian Rules Football. Our guest, Brunette Lenkic, is one of the authors of Play On. Welcome, Brunette.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me here.
Brunette, we were both at your book launch last night for Play On, and it occurred to me what an amazing timing that it was just after the All-Star Women's game. Is that a coincidence or...?
Look, it was just wonderful that Gillon McLachlan brought the date of the National Women's League forward, because when we first started writing the book, it was 2020. We'd actually been hoping to have the book out for the centenary of women's football last year, but that was a bit undoable, not doable, I should say. So when Gillon announced last year, let's try it for 2017, you know, let's be bullish about this, Rob and I were saying, yes, exactly, let's be bullish about it.
Fantastic. What struck me in the book too when I started reading it is how long women have actually been playing the game. In my head it was about 25 years. But what's become apparent from the historians is that women have been playing football for around 100 years. I think 1915 was the first recorded game. Why do you think it's taken so long for the AFL to get a women's league?
That's an interesting question. The women playing football has always run in parallel with the men's league. And, you know, at different times it was encouraged and then at different times it was discouraged. So during the World Wars it was encouraged because it was a morale booster. It was drawing crowds. It was raising money for patriotic causes. But then between times it wasn't considered seemly for women to be playing. Churches came out against it. Some women were told by husbands or boyfriends or fathers that they weren't to play football. It probably wasn't until we had second wave feminism when women started taking control of what they wanted to do and how they wanted to do it and what they wanted to play that women started doing it on a more formal basis. So late 70s here in Melbourne, there were a few teams started, and then Gemma Griffiths got sick of sitting on the sidelines. She had great uncles who had played and were playing captains for Geelong in the past, and she decided she wanted to set up a league. So she did that with an American woman, Leslie Fraser.
As a West Australian, I'm glad to see that the history has been correctly told, Brunette, so thanks very much for that, because the game started in the West. And it's an amazing record. The book is beautiful. Thank you. There really were crowds of 6,000 as far back as 1910, weren't there, watching women play football?
Yeah, and in fact, the first game that was played in Victoria was played in Ballarat, a Ballarat side against a Melbourne side, and it had a similar size crowd to Saturday night's game. And when I was at Saturday night's game, I couldn't help thinking that real buoyancy, the joy, the festivity, you know, great big smiles, people were involved and interested, must have mimicked what happened in Ballarat, because there was a lot of support for it back then. Of course, in Ballarat, they didn't have the 750,000 people watching on TV at the same time.
Well, how many million people were living in Australia at that time?
Yeah, exactly. Can't tell you, sorry.
No,
but just another point, Danae, is, you know, you're talking about 6,000 not being the biggest crowd, because I'm assuming you're talking about 1929 in Adelaide.
That's right.
When 41,000 people watched at a carnival, a sports carnival, two women's teams playing. Mm. So 41,000, it's going to take a while, I think, for us to get that for the women's game when we also factor in the TV audience.
Some of those games were called, that attracted huge crowds, were called muff games. So can you explain what muff games
muff
are?
Muff games tended to predate the women's competitive football games, and they tended to be games that were more burlesque in nature. So people wore costumes, men and women played together. There were sort of a loose set of rules, but it wasn't necessarily what could be construed as proper football.
No, there were some games where men had one arm tied to their side and things like that, wasn't
it? Yeah, when men and women played together, they very often tried to make it that the women would win. So, so men had to kick with their non-preferred foot. They weren't allowed to take overhead marks. They had to give way to women. I remember in one game that if a woman was running for the ball, they had to let her get it.
Wow. Okay. Well, Debbie Lee spoke last night at the book launch, and she's
female football royalty.
Yeah, absolutely. She's played over 300 games in the VFL, and she just spoke so well about her journey. And one thing that struck me is just how hard it's been to keep pushing through. I mean, she talked about her cars getting keyed during games, the verbal abuse she's experienced on the field from male players. She talked about a story where the male senior players actually bought a spa and filled it with beer and got so loud and raucous and started yelling things at the girls. And I thought, do you still hear stories like that? Do you think that's still a stigma that's going to go on, or have we broken through some of those?
Look, I've seen more than 100 girls and women's football matches, and that's certainly not typical of what happens anymore. I see games where during the breaks, dogs run onto the field and chase balls, and little girls in tutus are kicking footballs, and dads are kicking with their daughters, and mums are kicking with their daughters, and that's more typical. I'm not saying that the rest of that hasn't happened in the past. I don't see it now. I've been watching senior women's football for probably 3 or 4 years now.
I think it happens more on social media now than actually at the Oval, would seem.
Could be.
Yeah.
And there's been attention paid to tattoos and pearls recently with Mo Hope and Susan Alberti on Australian Story, which was fantastic. And last week, Mo Hope was at a charity breakfast wearing a string of pearls, joking about having not stolen them. Can you tell us about Dorry, who was Doris Dorry Donaldson as part of the Gibson and Foy team back in 1917?
The Foy and Gibson team. Yeah. So
I put the Gibson first, didn't I?
Can't Freudian help it, slip. Danae.
Thanks, Danae Gibson.
So possibly are you talking about Olive McKenna, who was a very sporty woman? She was actually the great-great-aunt of Eagles champion Guy McKenna. I'll just tell you this story because it's gorgeous anyway, and if there's something else you want to ask me about Doris, I'll get back to that. But Olive used to have a regular darts match with the greengrocer to work out which of them was going to foot the bill for the weekly grocery. And she later went on to become a bowls champion in Perth. So a lot of very sporty women who got the opportunity to play and loved playing football, because football is the sort of sport where you can excel in one area and then not necessarily in others. And like Debbie Lee last night was saying that she wasn't a particularly skilled player. I find that hard to believe. You've won 5 Helen Lambert medals and not be a skilled player. But she did tell me once that she was self-taught didn't have a fluent kicking style, because she used to drop the ball with her left hand and kick with her right foot. And then when she eventually corrected that, she never felt like she had a completely fluent style. But I think she's probably just one of these overachievers who has very high standards.
I think so. Dorry Donaldson is in that picture. And what it says in Play On is Doris Dorry Donaldson is wearing a necklace with what appears to be a pearl drop pendant. And her cap is plumped, suggesting she has long hair.
Yeah. Excellent. Yes, now I remember. It's just that...
That's okay.
It's been a while since I looked really hard at the Foy and Gibson team, and I've had thousands of facts in this book and I'm trying to juggle them all in my head. Yeah, well, in that studio photo of the Foy and Gibson team, the women are arranged in a very ladylike fashion. They've got their hands clasped demurely. Mm-hmm. And Dorry is actually wearing a necklace with a pearl drop. She's got a hat on that's really quite plump, suggesting that she's got really long hair. Mm. Some of the others have little kerchiefs tucked in the pockets of their uniforms, so to wipe the sweat, wipe the perspiration, the glow from their brows as they're playing.
And I understand that they had access to a lot of fabric. That's why their dresses that they played football in back then were so voluminous.
Yeah, that was certainly part of it, because Foy and Gibson sold acres and acres of silk, and it's quite possible that they were like running billboards for their employers because they were playing in silk. And we actually recreated the uniform for an exhibition that I was involved with last year. And the skirt itself took almost 4 metres, I think, to replicate what they were playing in.
That's crazy. Sounds practical. Now, obviously, we're part of the LGBTIQ AFL community, as we like to call it. But and recently, we were involved in the broadcast at the Pride game. What's interested me is the discussion around inclusivity in football has mostly revolved around when's the first footballer going to come out. And I think now that the Women's League has become part of the national AFL and so many openly gay women, how do you think that's going to change the landscape there with the men, maybe?
I would hope that the AFL realises that it's not actually that hard for a competition to be inclusive, and that actually people these days don't really care that much.
Yeah.
What I would love to see is something like the Players Association invite those people who want to say who they are, and really it's none of our business if people don't want to say, but if they want to say, just like Mo said with her tattoos, that this is who I am, I would love to see the women and those men who want to claim their sexuality come out together so that it's like one big family, you know, we're continuing to be inclusive. I think otherwise the first man who comes out is going to have an unhealthy level of attention paid to him. So why not do it as, you know, one sporting association? Do it all together, I'd say.
Yeah. Play On is an engaging and important social history of Australia. How important is the way you use language in the book? I mean, right at the prologue stage, you talk about calling it Australian rules football, which gladdens my heart. But use of first names, and how important was the language in writing this history?
That's a really good question, Danae, and it was something that Rob and I discussed, and we discussed it with Echo Publishing as well. We decided that because the old-fashioned names were so piquant themselves, we really wanted to keep them there. So a Mavis or a Joan or a Gladys or a Doris remained that way. We didn't take the usual sporting convention of just referring to them by their surnames, because they weren't thinking of themselves as footballers. They were women who played football. But then the change came when the modern league started to be set up and women were starting to think of themselves as footballers. And we thought that was the point in the book, that we should start referring to them by the usual sporting convention.
And why do you think it was fundraising that was such an important part of the women's game?
I think because that gave them an in into social approval. If women were raising money,
it was
then
okay.
It was acceptable.
Yeah.
And you actually read that in a lot of the reports where someone might be critical of it and someone else says, look, so long as they're raising money, we don't care what they're doing. While that's declined now, what hasn't changed is altruism. You know, women still do a lot of outreach programs through football. There's a particular game that's played in Western Australia every year, and it's been for 25 years to honour a very, very talented young woman who took her own life. And this game is played to remind people to look out for each other and to promote robust mental health.
And that's been influenced in the men's game as well. They're wearing pink socks for raise money and awareness for breast cancer, and there's Beyond Blue Round and all sorts of things that are happening too. So I think that's influenced the men's games as well.
Sure, sure. And, you know, and why not have sport as part of social engagement?
Yeah, absolutely.
Looking at reporting over the century that women have played competitive football, I read this. One girl left the ground as a result of a knock in the eye and another had to be escorted from the field. Apart from these casualties, several others heroically battled on with bruised arms and shins, and one was conspicuous by a black eye, which could have been written last week almost, but it's actually from the Kalgoorlie Miner in December 1917. We watched women play a vigorous game under lights at Witten Oval on Saturday night. When was the first game that women played under lights?
Ah, good question, Danae. It was actually 1917. So in Kalgoorlie.
Again,
it was a carnival atmosphere. Probably one of the reasons was that the grounds weren't available at other times to women. So they played under lights. And I had a hard time imagining how they would have done that, because they probably trained during the day. And when you play night games, your depth perception is very different. So they were being asked to try something quite difficult under lights. But how exciting. I checked with an historian from the WA Footy Commission and said, when did the blokes start playing under lights? And he said, I think it was at least 50 years later.
Wow.
Amazing. Louise Knitter was a tough player, a three-time All-Australian and so much more. I love the stories of women like Louise and Debbie Lee and Nicole Graves and Jo Huggins. How important is it to share the history of women like them?
I saw Louise recently, and Louise really rues the fact that she's no longer able to play footy. She's got a 14-month-old son. And in fact, this is just a bit of trivia. Six women in Australia have played more than 300 games, and three of them have infant sons. But Louise,
Sorry to interrupt, Brunette, but that's looking good for mother-son picks in the National Women's
exactly,
League.
Exactly, exactly.
Or AFL, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Louise is really quietly spoken. You wouldn't think she was as tough a competitor as she was on the field. Really important, I think, to share this because we don't want younger women thinking that they're the be-all and end-all. What I really hope with this book that what Rob and I have done is given women the chance to reclaim their own heritage, their own footballing heritage, rather than take it exclusively from the male tradition. You know, there are so many fabulous women who've played, who've battled the odds, who've struggled. And recently I just started writing something where I match the marquee players to their historic female counterparts. And despite the fact that there's quite often just very general information about games, there were enough women who were skilled enough that journalists couldn't but help celebrate that skill.
And there's recently been a focus on a lot of the multi-sports female players like Jess Cameron, Cecilia McIntosh, Emma Kinney. In the 1940s, in your book you mentioned Gladys Phillips was a versatile sportswoman who played all sports including cricket and her first love softball for Australia. Did you find many stories like that? It seems to be quite
loads.
Common.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So Myra McKenzie, another one who played in 1933 in a game where she was wearing a Carlton Guernsey. She played six other sports. Eddie Smith in Kalgoorlie, 1921, as a 13-year-old, won best on ground. It's beautiful, this beautiful gold medal that's been inscribed with her initials. Takes pride of place, I've got to say, with a photo of the team in her daughter's family home. But Etty also was a talented cricketer and swimmer as well, because women couldn't concentrate just on one sport, i.e. Aussie rules. So if they were good at sport, they played whatever they could.
Still looks like the same today.
We might get frustrated by Twitter trolls and other commentary below the line on social media in 2016, but criticism has always been around. In 1947, that's 70 years ago almost, the Sun News Pictorial ran a full page asking if women should play football, and Richmond captain coach Jack Dyer argued for the no position. The post-World War II revival of the game also saw increased opposition to it, exemplified by that, I think. Has every surge met with equal resistance?
Oh, I think not necessarily equal resistance. Each time the resistance has been pegged back just a little more, so eventually the surge, you know, just became this tsunami. Yes, but certainly there has been quite vocal opposition.
It's fascinating to read some of the stuff from a long time ago. I'm so glad it's changed, but there's still criticism this week that we've seen.
Yeah, don't read social media, I say. The first Australian female parliamentarian, Dame Enid Lyons, she asked for better coverage right back in 1948. How important do you think TV coverage is to the sport, and how has it changed the sport?
I think TV coverage is going to really open people's minds, because seeing is believing. You can read about women playing well, but when you actually see their skill level, when you see their decision making on the field, someone was saying this morning that what he loved about the women's game is that it's a player's game, not a coach's game. So he was watching Saturday night and he could see the women playing their own natural game, which is, you know, really exciting. It's a really exciting brand of footy to watch.
Yeah.
And getting coverage for the National Women's League will be important.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've talked about women playing in the West way back in 1915 and then moving to Kalgoorlie and then across the great nation, the great big brown dry land. In 1951, the first recorded game involving Indigenous women was played in Northern Territory. How important is that Adelaide Northern Territory Alliance in the National Women's League? So NT and Adelaide had a joint submission for the Crows to get a licence.
And traditionally, I grew up in South Australia, and traditionally Adelaide has been linked to Darwin, and so South Australia to the Northern Territory. I think it's terrific, because the game is developing slightly differently in Queensland. There are some fabulous footballers in the territory, And the other thing that's great about the Territory is that the commentators there really value their female footballers. I heard Charlie King calling a game and he was really informed, knew the players, not just their skill level, but could also tell the listeners interesting details about the players, just like you get in the men's game. Whereas I've heard other commentators who will pick out one or two players and then treat the rest as... you know, as if they're making up the numbers.
Yeah, or reading from a cheat sheet.
Yeah, well, some of them, unfortunately, do not even read from a cheat sheet. They just there was one game in which one player who ended up best on ground, and one of the male commentators, I've got to say, did not mention her name once.
Wow.
Just the number.
There are so many beautiful pictures in here, and from the 1950s, if you could describe that one, I likened it to the photo of Emma Kearney, Ellie Blackburn and Katie Brennan.
Three women together, arms around the shoulders, just really, you know, after a game, looking really pleased with themselves. And in fact, the son of one of these women was at the launch last night. Wow. So proud to see his mother's picture in the book. And I've got to say, I really think that it's the tip of the iceberg. People, once they realise that there's legitimacy now around women having played football, are going to go back into their photo albums. And that eccentric photo of mum in some sort of thing that looked like a footy uniform, there are going to be more questions asked. And I've actually seen that firsthand, where people have offered us photos and then we've gotten in touch with other family members who suddenly, when they realise it's a thing and it's an important thing, and what their mother or their grandmother or their great aunt did was part of a history, have suddenly become so much more proud of those contributions. So I'm hoping that people from all around Australia will start showing us other photos, slides and so forth.
You'll probably get people coming out of the woodworks and showing you old photos when you're at games and that kind of thing. Well, thank you so much, Brunette, for coming in. This book's been so timely, and I think this year there's just been so many women getting involved in the game in many levels. When we started Chicks Talking Footy, we thought we were unique, but there's plenty of women out there, even in the media now. The only thing missing from the book is obviously the All-Star game on Saturday night, but it goes right up till about July this year. The play on the Hidden History of Women Australia's Rules of Football, along with Rob Hess, is available now. So pick up a copy, read about Australian women's history, and thank you so much for coming in and sharing the stories.
Thank you, Fee, and thank you, Danae. I really enjoyed the opportunity.
I'm Katie Brennan from the Western Bulldogs. You're listening to Chicks Talking Footy on Joy 94.9.
Katie Brennan, one of our favourites, played an awesome game at the All-Star Women's Game on Saturday night, and did a great interview with her at the Pride game as well.
Along with Mel Hickey, who I've got to say, I love Mel Hickey. I love watching her play. She's amazing.
And we've had a message from one of our listeners saying, is Joy doing a giveaway for the book? Well, the short answer is no.
No.
But you can grab a copy at any good bookstore and support the book.
Yeah, support women's sporting history.
All right, Bree.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Tell us what's happening with the finals. We've got four games coming up this week.
Yeah, we've got a Thursday final. What do we think about that?
Oh, bollocks.
Yeah, we don't like them.
Thursday night games are stupid.
Yeah.
But they've done it on the back of a bye.
I don't care.
Though, haven't they?
No, everyone's still got to get up for work on a Friday.
Oh, it's just stupid.
And Danae likes to go to bed by 9.
Right, okay. Did you hear that, Gil?
I hope. No, that's not a very mature, reasoned response, but I think Thursday night football sucks.
Yeah. Well, half time's your bedtime, isn't it? So, but West Coast Bulldogs, they're playing over in the West.
The Doggies have rolled the dice, Fee. They've rolled the dice. They've made 5 changes. In comes Stringer, Liberatore, Wood, McRae and Roughhead. So 4 of those are coming back from injury. Haven't played a lot of football. Going into a final against a red-hot Eagles team who have made 1 change. Jetta out, Brown in. You'd have to go Eagles.
Jetta out?
Yeah, Jetta's injured. Mm.
Jetta hasn't played well for the Eagles.
Oh, he's hit form as has the Eagles. All I can say about this game is woof, 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 go Doggies, go.
Yes.
Go Doggies, go.
I find the interstate rivalry fascinating. It's like if you're from Western Australia or South Australia or Queensland, you'll never ever barrack for the other team in the event of finals. But if you're a Victorian, you would always barrack for the Victorian team if they were playing an interstate team in the grand final.
It's the two-team town business. And yeah. and you've been barracking for Hawthorn since you were a kid, right, Fee?
Yep, 1983.
They've existed the whole time you've been alive.
Yes.
Right?
True.
Yeah. So there's a whole... We'll talk about that
another
time.
We can do a whole
time.
Show on that.
Yeah, okay. Moving on.
Moving on. Next, we've got...
Friday night.
Cats and Hawthorn. Fee, how are you feeling?
Look, I'm going to the game with Rachel, one of our other Chicks Talking Footy. She's another Hawks supporter. There's been such a deep rivalry between the Hawthorn and the Cats for about... since the 2008 grand final, probably.
Yep.
And, look, I haven't been happy with the way Hawthorn have been playing generally, so I'm hoping the bye round's given them a chance to do a bit of a reset. And Geelong are looking very good. And, yeah, our ruck at the moment's not strong, so we've got Selwood and Dangerfield in the centre. I'm not confident that we'll win, to be honest. I wouldn't tip us.
You're nervous.
Yeah.
We don't tip, so it doesn't matter.
No.
But
I won my tipping comp. It's meant to rain all day Friday. Does that change anything for Hawthorn?
Oh, Hawthorn don't traditionally play well in the wet, I think.
Right. But they play well in the wind because they win a lot down in Tasmania.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's probably seasoned us a little bit.
Right. Okay.
Who knows? Anyway, I think it'll be a good game.
Go Hawks.
Not that I like it.
Well,
it
Melbourne's
be a good game
looking
if we lose,
forward to it. It's the only match in Melbourne on the weekend.
And there'll be 90,000 people at the G on Friday night.
Yeah, even if it's raining, they'll still turn up. So
Saturday afternoon, that must mean it's the Sydney Derby, the Battle of the Bridge. So 55,000+ people are going to watch a Sydney Swans play the Greater Western Sydney Giants.
I think that's going to be a great game.
Fantastic. I think it's a fantastic round of footy.
When I'm not invested like I am with Hawthorn, I can kind of enjoy the game.
It's the biggest game that New South Wales would have ever had.
Well, they've apparently lit the Sydney Harbour Bridge up with players from both teams
buddies.
For the week leading up to the game.
It's fantastic. And then the last game is Adelaide versus North Melbourne. Gee, it'll be a turn up for the books because it's an elimination final. So if North beat Adelaide,
I think Adelaide will prevail. North aren't looking so great, but that's at Adelaide Oval. But we'll be talking all about the finals next week on Chicks Talking Footy. Same time, same bat channel. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.